Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the live issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your host, King Baby Duck. Well, what a frightening past week we've had, huh? And I'm not even talking about Halloween. It was reported that bacon, the food of the gods throughout all religions, is said to cause cancer. Fucking bacon! The geek's prime energy source. Which, by the way, it seems this day and age, everything causes cancer. Food, drinks, staying out in the sun for too long, Adele's latest single, which by the way really does cause cancer if you listen to it. Everything causes some sort of cancer, disease, disability, or even some sort of awful shit to your body. So heed this advice. Keep on eating the bacon. In fact, eat more of it just to spite the report. Because let's face it, we can't let those vegan assholes win. And let me be clear, I'm talking about vegan assholes, not vegans in general. I mean the ones who look at you eating a Big Mac and declare you worse than fucking Mussolini. Those are the enemies of the world whose victory shall not be claimed. So please, for the sake of our country, nay, the world, eat some bacon. After all, if bacon causes death, then committing to kelp is suicide. A very special message from your good friends at the Boston Bass Brigade. And now, let's get our podcast started. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these records on cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. We're starting off today's show with a brand new track from Jam Project, and this currently serves as the opening theme to an anime that I'm sure may become this year's best program. I'm talking, of course, about One Punch Man. This is The Hero, Ikeneru Kubushi ni Hi o Tsukero.
Kiri kiri genkai mate.
was Gold Betty with Happy Pyramid from 2008's Betty's Buggy album. Sadly, not only is that album out of print, but the band disbanded 5 years ago. Oh well, what can you do? Alright, I'm about to get a little personal in this segment, so apologies if it lacks the level of geekiness that you're used to in my talks. A couple weeks ago, I took part in a panel after a documentary called Bluebirds Fly, which follows three Rhode Island families with kids with different spectrums of autism. Give it a look up whenever you get the chance. Anyways, as someone who grew up on the spectrum, I found it was very important for me to give the audience, which had about 90 to 100 people there, my personal experiences. As such, I made clear that my life and what I went through is far different than anyone else's on the autism spectrum, and the reason for that isn't for some egotistical excuse, but rather because every single case is just as unique as the last. Some will end up lucky like I did and have a normal life, whereas others probably won't. Each person with it is different, with their functionality ranging from good to bad. Hopefully, I was able to give some of these parents some good words of wisdom, like let their obsessions transform into a work and passion, make sure they're aware of their disability at as young an age as possible, and convince them to find a club in high school and college to join in order to help out with both making friends and honing in on their social skills. There's one moment in Bluebirds Fly where these parents are still baffled by what causes autism, as the numbers and cases have been growing largely without any reason. After the film, I was given the opportunity to share my beliefs on it, and I'm going to tell you right now, what I'm about to say may be controversial, but I believe it's not far-fetched. In all honesty, to me, autism is part of the next phase in human evolution. We tend to be a lot smarter and more focused than most average individuals, becoming savants, if you will. I myself have found to be knowledgeable about Japanese pop culture, gaming, and music, hence why I do this podcast here and why I write for Electric Sisterhood. But with evolution, there are kinks, or crossed wires, as I like to call them, that need to be ironed out as time goes by. For those with the spectrum, those kinks can be on the lines of social awkwardness and various forms of sensitivity, and I'm speaking about that via experience. Sometimes I have a tiny little bit of social awkwardness, but I manage to try to fight through it. I remember this documentary from a few years ago called Walking with Cavemen, and they showcased the different means of how humans have evolved since we started walking upright. There were some species that had strong intelligence and tracking skills, whereas others in the same line had trouble differentiating pain or the concept of the afterlife or even anything that wasn't right in front of their faces. This is the part where the spectrum is going through right now, but with enough time, these parts of the mentality will be ironed out, and I predict that maybe within a few thousand years from now, humanity will be filled with savants that'll help shape the future for the better of the human race. Hopefully some MIT scientist is listening to this and will do some research, because I really don't have much time and I'm probably not as smart as any of those people. I know this is a very loaded segment filled with much to think about, but it's something that I really wanted to get off my chest for a while. As you know, I don't talk much about my autism because I don't ever want it to be the focus of the podcast. I'm here to talk gaming, anime, and music, and I don't want people to be just listening because my mind functions differently than others. And if that's why you listen and you don't care about what I have to say, then please stop wasting your time with my program. I've worked hard all my life to get where I'm at, and as I mentioned in the panel, I just see my autism now as a mere footnote on the accomplishments that I have achieved in the 30 years of my life. But anyways, if the chance to see Bluebirds Fly comes your way, be it in a theater or some streaming site, give it a watch. Hopefully it'll open your eyes and mind to what may be a much better perception of the autism spectrum than any other documentary has been able to showcase. Now, why don't we return to this week's playlist? Here's something brand new from The Nervous Records, who released their latest EP, The Nervous Record Part 1, last week, featuring 5 incredibly solid melodies with guest spots from members of TV on the Radio and The Killers. This song is called This Won't Be the Same.
You start to wish upon a moon, and tie your wishes to balloons. Just watch them float away from you into
そこら辺の酒を持ってこい。飲んで歌って踊りましょうか。 と手を合わせてハイタイバッ、ちょっといとこ見てみたい。気のうち飲んじゃって吐いちゃって、これが日本の夜明けぜよ、よよよいよよよい、めでてえな。Let's go! Party music!
Dynamites with Let's Go Party Music, come on, from this year's Shiro Sala EP. Samurai Dynamites, of course, being one of the featured Japanese performers on the recent South by Southwest Japan Night Tour this past year. I've got a special message for some certain Steven Universe fans. I'm talking about the ones that feel like their love for the show is more above any other person's. The ones that feel that fan art must portray the gems as they exactly are, with no artistic changes whatsoever. The ones who drove a fan who created a cool interpretation of Rose, Steven's mother, to attempt suicide because they started bullying them over said drawing. And that message is simple. Fuck off! Steven Universe is one of the most beloved cartoons that's currently on the air right now. A show that teaches its viewers to embrace one's differences and to not put anyone down for them. And their most hardcore fans, people who claim to be about love and acceptance, have wound up transforming into whiny, bitchy, haughty, taughty bullies. If the phrase social justice warrior didn't leave a horrible taste in your mouth, then it should now. And it pisses me off that these people can take this show that was made for everyone and have their fan base so closed off in a way that's pure elitist. It's happening in the cosplay community, on DeviantArt, Tumblr, in other places, and it has to stop right now. And this hurting doesn't stop there. The problem has escalated so high up that one of the Steven Universe executive producers, ENJQ, had to jump onto Twitter and give a message to these despicable people. Quote, "Let people draw whatever fan art they want. This is my consistent position on fan work. If you don't like someone else's fan art, make your own dang fan art. It's all for fun." End quote. And it's supposed to be for fun. It's a Cartoon Network show for all ages to enjoy. But these so-called fans are trying to take this show and keep it for themselves And if anyone outside their itty-bitty circle declares their love for it, they do all that they can to push them away from the show. And it's people like this that make it hard for someone to get into a series. They get scared away from checking it out in fear that they'll be attacked not by people who've never seen the show, but by those who declare their love for the cartoon as if their opinion is the only one that matters. We have a phrase for people like that. Egotistical shitbags. So let me say it again. To those who bully those out of a fandom because they're different from you or they do a fan art that you don't like, please, fuck the fuck off. On a side note, I do like where Steven Universe is going, especially with Peridot now helping out the other gems. It's a great series. Granted, it's no walkthrough, but it's still an awesome show nonetheless. Anyways, let's calm down a bit and go into some more music. Halloween may be over, but the brilliant green front woman Tomoko Kawase wants to keep the holiday going with her latest EP, Tommy's Halloween Fairy Tale, which features both her February 6th and Heavenly 6th personas. Taking on the latter role, here she is with Living Dead Diner Girls.
Hey!
By Iggy and the Stooges from 2013's Ready to Die LP, one of our favorite records from that year. Our hearts go out to the band as they recently lost their saxophonist Steve McKay. He truly helped make this particular song more catchy and full of life. Joining me now are the developers of Robo Puzzle Smash, a game I got to go hands-on with at this past fall's Boston Festival of Indie Games. Please welcome from Pixel Please, Benjamin Cole and Jason Pogue.
Hello. Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
We're doing great. We're actually just trying to get our development machine back up and running so we can work on some art.
Wait, what happened to it?
I'm trying to boot up my MacBook Pro, and it just stays in the boot process. Just the thing's spinning forever. I just did a disk check and trying to fix some permissions and everything. The hard drive seems to check out fine, so I don't know what it is.
Maybe it's that damn El Capitan, I'll tell you that.
No, actually, I rolled back.
Really?
I had Yosemite and I rolled back to Mavericks because I was getting pissed off with it, and I don't know.
Maybe your MacBook is punishing you for that.
That's a problem right there.
The spirit of Steve Jobs is haunting me.
Upgrade.
You want to tell the listeners it's Halloween or?
Well, while we're recording this, it is the day before Halloween. So Steve Jobs' computer is haunting the Pixel Pleases. So yay, I guess. Or boo, rather. So please, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about Pixel Please. How did it come into fruition?
So I've been running Pixel Please for about 4 years now. We started at an indie games get together. So I host a little event at my house and we get a bunch of indie developers together. We show each other games and have pizza and beer. And a couple of the guys, they had some neat projects they were showing. So we decided to get together and start making some games together. Our first game that we started on was a little title called Star Saver. It's out on iOS right now. It's actually really fun, but it took us like 3 years to make.
It's not really that little of a title.
It's actually
a huge, 12-hour Metroidvania on the iOS.
Damn!
But it's fun. But it took us way too long to make. So we shipped a couple smaller games in the interim, and we started taking some contracts too. So we were able to grow the company and ship some pretty cool projects.
That's pretty awesome. Now for the new game, Robo's Puzzle Smash, how did you come up with this idea?
Okay, that started with you, Ben, on the plane ride.
Yeah, well, so it's kind of two concepts that came together.
Yeah.
When I was flying back and forth from GDC, every year I work on a little game on the plane. I call it my little plane jam game. And one of them was a little rotating... I wanted a puzzle game where you rotated the playfield. And I put it together in a couple hours, showed it off at one of the indie game get-togethers, and nobody understood how to play it at all. So, kind of at the same time...
So we decided, yes, let's make a full product off of this.
So, kind of at the same time, we were finishing up Rappin' Star Saver, and me and my wife were fighting, cats and dogs, just over the stress of shipping the game.
Yes.
And we played a lot of, Puzzle Fighter, we played a lot of Dr. Mario.
Yeah.
And we kind of got our stress out playing these competitive puzzle games. And we thought it might be a good idea to take this little rotating puzzle game that I made and make that into a versus game where you could see how the computer played and kind of get a feel for what to do and how to rotate and how the blocks behaved. And that ended up working out really well because we see people come up to it. They see how other people are playing. They explain it to each other. And it ended up working out a lot better than I would have ever guessed.
Yeah.
What I love about it is just how quick on your feet you have to be with this game. It's not like in Tetris where, okay, you might have a little bit of time to figure out where to put this block.
Yeah.
But when you do the whole flip around aspect of it, you're like, okay, I got to be quick and put this piece here and then this one here. Otherwise, I'm probably going to be screwed at the end.
Yeah, and you might accidentally screw yourself up by rotating in the wrong way or just keep rotating so much that you mix up the whole thing. You have to be very careful but quick.
I did that a couple times too.
Yeah. One of the things that we actually keep doing is we've been taking this to, I think we've taken it to six conventions so far.
Yeah, I think about, five or six.
And every time we take it, we tune up the speed just a little bit, make it a little more aggressive and a little bit more just seat of your pants.
Yeah.
And every time we do that, we've gotten a better reaction.
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at now is, I don't think we're going to tune it to be a whole lot faster than it is now, but we've been getting feedback towards that direction. So every time we just keep jacking it up just a little bit, and people are loving it.
Yeah, what's kind of funny is that, we wanted a fast game, and we keep jacking up the speed, and we go back. It's like at one of the conventions, Super Puzzle Fighters over here, and it's open spot. Let's go play that. And we're like, this is slow. I don't remember it being this slow.
But
our game is that fast that Puzzle Fighter seems slow.
Well, and one of the other things we did is we have like 1-to-1 drop ratio. So if you break a block, you drop a block.
Right.
So things like that, like Puzzle Fighter, it's really unclear how many blocks drop when you do an attack. We just made it like as simple and as aggressive as we could make it. And, you know, you drop a block, you break a block. So it's always this constant back and forth.
And what's cool about it is it just adds this whole another level of competitiveness to this whole puzzle genre. And I feel like that's what's really going to draw people into playing this game when it's finally out.
Yeah. And what do you think of the power meter?
I'm trying to remember because it's been over a month since I played the game.
So what happens is when you know like the super meter that you build up in like Marvel versus Capcom.
Yes. Yeah.
So we have something very similar where every time you take an action or you get attacked, you build up your little super meter just by a little bit. And when you have one of the segments full, you can break anything on the play field anytime you want.
Oh yeah, that's right.
You spend 1/3 of your bar. You have like three parts to the bar. Spend 1/3 of the bar to change your current block into, well, it's a placeholder, but it looks like a disco ball, and everybody's kind of taken to the disco ball, so we just keep on calling it the disco ball. But anyway, changes it into the disco ball. You drop it anywhere, and it breaks anything. This is key because each character has their own set of colored blocks that they're dropping on the opponent. And because each character has their own set of colored blocks, it means that the other person doesn't necessarily have the ability to break them. You need to have breaker blocks of the same color to break those blocks. They'll show up with a big X in them on your field. So the only way to get rid of them is with this disco ball and giving the player the ability to willingly spawn one of them to break these X blocks or anything that they want. You know, it makes it feel more of a fight, and that you're actively participating and making decisions on what kind of
it makes it feel like a real battle.
And what happens is because that meter fills up so fast,
is
you get this really fast back and forth as everyone's just desperately trying to clear away stuff like at the top of their play field all the time.
Yeah, and it builds up faster as you're having blocks dropped on you.
Right, because it also has that sort of like turn-based RPG type of feel to it. I know it's not like one player takes a turn, you know, separately, but at the same time, it has that feeling of like, I gotta figure out how I'm gonna defeat this guy as quickly as possible, but what's the right maneuver that I'm gonna be able to pull off?
Right, well, a lot of it's like, you know, your opponent did something and you have to counter that. And you do something and your opponent has to counter it. So it's kind of just, it ends up being a lot, it ends up being really seat of your pants a lot of the time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
And especially, the AI at the top difficulty levels is just absolutely brutal. And
oh, yeah.
I can imagine. Just going about 1-on-1 against a regular human character, that's even challenging on its own.
Well, what's cool is eventually you when all the rules click and you kind of like step into the matrix.
Yeah, it takes like a round or two, maybe a couple of games, depending on the person, for it to click within your brain. Because when you're first seeing it, and seeing all the blocks, you know, when you're rotating the field, like, I can't keep track of all of this. This is too much. But then, I don't know, it starts to, you know, feed into your brain, and it eventually it clicks and you see the matrix code, kind of.
All the pieces come together and you realize how you're going to be able to defeat them.
Well, even like after you get these basic rules, it gets a little bit deeper because you can line up these combos and you start to look like 3 or 4 moves ahead.
Yeah, and you get used to rotating in a careful manner to give like a bit of aftertouch to stuff that's dropped.
But it's like, it's weird because, you know, some of these, like, I can't play with people at conventions anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Because I just, it's one of those things where, like, you know,
you can't hold back.
Right. You're playing so slow and you feel like, you know, playing with kid gloves. It's like if I'd go against, like, top Marvel versus Capcom players, I would just get, like, annihilated without them trying.
Yeah. Right.
So there's a lot of that kind of nuanced skill involved that I'm really hoping that we can kind of push this game into like competitive circles.
Yeah.
That would be, you know, that would be awesome for this type
of thing. And it does have potential of doing that. And I'll tell you that. It's really cool. And the two times I got to play it over at FIG, every time, every move, it felt like it was just keeping me on the edge of my seat as I was trying to stay alive in this battle.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm glad you feel that way. That's what we're going for.
Absolutely. Now, what can you tell us about the characters of Robo Puzzle Smash? I know you just mentioned a little bit about them, but is there like a story that goes with each of them that explains why they're partaking in this fight?
No.
Yes and no. So we don't have like an overarching grand vision of the story. That's not how I make games.
Right.
I really go for kind of feel of the game and kind of mechanics first, and then I kind of backpedal into what the characters are and kind of what the story around the game is.
Yeah, the story kind of grows out of the framework of the game itself.
Right, and that way you don't get yourself into sticky situations where you need to make something behave in a certain way to hit like a plot point. I've worked on story-based games before where, you know, like a movie-based game.
Yeah.
And that is such a nightmare.
I can imagine. So it's kind of like old school, like Street Fighter 2, like the first Street Fighter 2 game that comes out. It you just maybe have like a short little bio about each character. It doesn't really give it like a real true backstory, but it gives you a sense of an idea of who they are.
And when I was a kid, you know, when I was playing Street Fighter 2 and hearing those bios and stuff, reading an EGM and everything, it didn't give much, but it gave enough to hint that there's a lot more to it, and it made me want to uncover it, and it got me more invested in it.
Well, and that's kind of what we're doing, is we're trying to build really cool, appealing characters, kind of based on anime tropes or like other
anime and game tropes.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do is build those characters, and then we're going to work to build some kind of world that encapsulates these characters and try to give some motivation to them. So you actually get like a little ending cinema, and you can kind of, you know, get rewarded for completing at least a single player game.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, I did play, as mentioned, I played the versus mode. I'm taking there's going to be a single player mode to the game as well. But what other kinds of modes do you want to add into Robo Puzzle Smash?
Tournament mode.
Yeah, I now all, a lot of this is kind of wish list stuff. We don't know because, you know, we're not a big studio.
Yeah, we're only able to do this in the time that we're not at, earning money with our main jobs.
Right.
So, like, I can't promise anything.
Yeah, we can't promise anything.
But I would personally really like to put a tournament mode in.
Yeah.
So we can actually do better tournaments.
So we can actually run tournaments better at conventions, basically. It's self-serving because we've run a couple of tournaments at conventions.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, keeping track of the brackets, you know, on a piece of paper. But, like, yeah, let's just... We need to get a tournament mode in this.
Yeah, that's something I'd like to build.
That way we can
The PAX East is coming up in March. You may have time to do a little bit, get that prepared if you guys are going to go over there.
Oh, what is PAX submission?
I don't know. We got to figure that out.
We're doing a little convention in Ohio, OGDE at COSAI.
Oh, nice.
We're going to be there. We'll probably run a tournament there. And then we're trying to get into MAGFest.
Guys would kick ass over at MAGFest.
Oh, it'd be so much fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, what was great is that one of the conventions, what was it, Otakon? They had MAGFest people there, and they saw our game, and they kept on coming back to our booth to play it. So I think we got some ins.
That's a good sign, yeah.
I don't want to jinx this, but
then we have like two other conventions this year.
Yeah, we're doing
in New Jersey.
We're doing GameCon.
Gameacon,
November. That's one in Atlantic City.
It's brand new. Yeah,
we try to run tournaments at all these, which is great for people to experience the game that way.
Yeah,
and that's the way we want people to experience it. But back to modes. So we have the single player. We got a versus where you can like set up your matches a little bit
And choose your stages. Yeah. That's another thing about this is that there's different stages and it matters because the grid sizes are different and the obstacle blocks, the permanent obstacle blocks, is different in all of them. So you need a different strategy in all of them. Some of them might be a little smaller and you need to be more, much quicker on your toes. And some of them are larger. And you get to set up a bigger chains that way.
Ooh, that's pretty interesting.
The story mode actually has... The story mode and the versus mode, they actually have, differences as you're progressing through the game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to promise, but I had an online mode working at one point.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get it working again.
Well, fingers crossed that you find a way to do that, because it feels like this is going to be a great game, not just for people to play in the same room together, but definitely with people that are online and across the world and such.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can squeeze that in. Most of the places where we're going to launch it do allow for updates. This will probably be a digital title. We're definitely developing it on Wii U.
Yeah.
We're looking at PS4. Wii U totally needs a game like this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we got it running on the Wii U, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's running on the Wii U.
It's running pretty good, too. So those platforms do allow for updates, so maybe we can sneak in a few more modes if it turns into something that, people are really... Really,
yeah, people are really behind it. Yeah, we'll definitely support the heck out of this game.
Excellent. Let me ask you, because at these conventions, I'm pretty sure you get some feedback from the people who play it. Like, what sort of things do you hear from these people after they're finished with fighting against one another in Robo Puzzle Smash?
When can I buy it? Can I buy this now?
Everyone loves Robert.
Yeah, there's...
Cute. Robear's awesome.
One of the smart robots is a
robotic bear.
It's a robotic bear, kind of done in the Mega Man boss style, and that has been far and away everyone's favorite to play as.
What else have we heard from people? Mostly, people just want to get it right away because they want their fix.
Just stick it in my veins. Come on.
Developed a drug, essentially.
That's what I'm saying. It's great to show this. It shows a lot of the feedback we get just by watching people play.
Mm-hmm.
So we see if they don't particularly understand like the little tutorial tips we're giving them. That's one thing we definitely need to change.
Yeah.
Is we need people to understand better how to play when they first start.
Mm-hmm. That's the hardest part is that very beginning.
Yeah,
getting people to understand it at the beginning without us holding their hand,
and
explaining all the rules to them.
Well, and not all the rules are important when you first start playing either. Yeah, so it's kind of that process of how do we kind of get people to understand the game and have fun with it immediately, but not bore them to death during that first, not competitive part. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So we're still working on that, and hopefully we can get that nailed out.
So would that be your next step towards completing Robo Puzzle Smash?
Well, that's kind of happening as we do iterations of the game.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's happening along with development. Our next step to finishing it is getting more characters in.
Yeah.
Getting more backgrounds in. Starting to look at things like the ending sequences, the music, all of those little...
A lot of content.
Yeah, menus, all of those little touches that make it feel really polished and make it into a game that feels complete.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of our next step.
Excellent. I gotta ask, who do you have helping out with the soundtrack for this game?
So we don't have anyone signed yet, but we are looking at Dave Dexter, who did some music on a previous game for me. He did all the music for, I believe, Heavy Sword. And a couple other kind of pretty significant indie titles. You can check him out at davedextermusic.co.uk, I think.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but he's a really cool guy, and he did some great work for us in the past, so we're thinking about using him again. Mm-hmm. One of the things I want to do, this is another feature.
Yes, I agree.
I want the theme song.
Want a theme song in Japanese?
Something, yeah. I just want it to be as cheeseball anime as humanly possible.
Yeah, like an early 80s mecha anime.
That's exactly what I want.
Theme song.
You know, we'll have to talk about this after the interview, but I might be able to help you out with that.
Oh, yeah.
That would be fantastic. Yeah.
I know some people.
Cool. And I want another song for one of the characters at least.
What, like an alternate song or something? Or?
No, like that's her stage song.
Oh,
cat Vocaloid.
Yeah, maybe. Talking about like the Sakura in Puzzle Fighter.
Yeah, like Sakura in Puzzle Fighter and Roll from the original Marvel vs. Capcom.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that. That was
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, she had like a little theme song that played. Yeah, that's what I want to do.
Cool.
So yeah, if you know someone, let me know.
I may know somebody. Yeah, I'll tell you a little. I'll tell you a couple of people that I know that after we're done with this interview. Cool. And I think we're getting to close to the end of it because I want to ask you to convince our listeners that when a time comes when the game is released, why should they play Robo Puzzle Smash?
Well, if you try it, you'll be instantly addicted. So maybe that's a reason to stay away from it.
Yeah. I don't know. That's more of a warning. It's intriguing. There hasn't been a competitive puzzle game in a while. It's fast-paced. If you're good at fighting games, if you're into fighting games, this is a different way to fight your friends.
Also, you know, it really is completely unique in sort of the puzzle space.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got like echoes of a lot of other games that we just absolutely loved playing. But I don't think there's been that sort of rotating
mechanic. There might be like one or two, but I don't know which ones they are.
If you need convincing, come out to one of the shows we're going to be at and play.
Yeah, you got to watch it in action. Play our arcade machine.
Is it the exact same arcade machine that you have throughout all the different conventions?
Yes. And we're getting it signed by a bunch of different people.
Yeah, I was one of the people who signed it.
Built. Yeah. Oh yeah, we didn't say. Did you know about the story of the car crash?
No.
Oh, okay. Do you want me to tell it?
Yeah,
go ahead and tell it. Okay.
I can't remember much of it, so...
Oh, God, yeah, because of what happened. That's understandable. Let's see. So, we were getting ready to go to Otakon. Ben was driving down to pick me up, and near my house, there's this bad left-hand turn right at a Wawa. And if you guys know what a Wawa is, it's a convenience store out here in New Jersey and surrounding areas. Anyway... he was making a left turn, and it turned yellow, and on the other side, it was turning yellow too, and this lady just drives right into him.
Oh, jeez.
Absolutely totaling the car, giving Ben a concussion.
Yikes.
Luckily, that's about it. You got some bruises and scrapes, and you were hurting and sore for a while, but luckily he was far and away... Okay,
but the arcade cabinet
was in the car, and it was demolished.
So all of the guts were completely.
Yeah, annoying. the main board was gone.
Oh, ouch! This is back in August, right?
Was this in August?
No, this is.
Otakon was in August in Boston.
It was August. Yeah.
July.
Okay, so my signature is still intact. All right, that's good to hear.
Your signature's mine. It's awesome. Yeah. We actually, at the last show we went to, we met Billy Mitchell, who also signed our arcade cabinet.
Really? Yeah. The King of Kongs?
Yes, we have the King of Kongs signature on the faceplate of the controller.
Yeah.
Did he play it? What did he think of it?
No, he didn't.
You know what?
You pounced on him as outside of the convention center at night.
Well, yeah. So, when what happened?
Not literally, but
I didn't pounce on him. So we were stuck at the booth the entire time because we had constant traffic coming to play the game.
Yeah.
And he was doing like a talk there or something.
Yeah.
And we just saw him walking around during the convention, but we couldn't actually get him over to play anything. So we finally saw, as everyone was packing up and leaving, we finally were able to, it's not exactly corner him, but we...
Yeah, there's a lot of open space outside. He could run away.
He could run away if he wanted to. But we did get him to come over, and we talked with him for a little bit.
Yeah, he graciously
signed the cabinet.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
He goes to quite a few conventions that we go to, so hopefully we can get him back to actually sit down and play it for a little bit.
Oh, I don't think we closed the loop on that story about the arcade machine getting demolished.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It did save my life.
Did it save your life?
Well, I like to say
Are you that. Embellishing?
No, I'm embellishing a little bit.
Okay.
But it was sitting in the back passenger side of the car.
Mm.
And that was what took the brunt of the damage.
Mm.
So the arcade machine, we pulled pieces of wood like out of a tree.
Stuff was strewn so freaking far away. It was ridiculous. I'm so happy and surprised that you're okay. But anyway, a lot of the framework of the machine was okay, like all the wood and stuff. The joysticks were good.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was bent a little bit, but it still works good enough to play this game. I guess you played it.
Yep, I did.
After it was reconstructed.
So yeah, we took the wood, we bolted it back together, we got all new guts for it. My dad helped me over a weekend to resurrect the arcade cabinet, and that's the one you saw at Boston Fake.
Yep. Well, that's good. Well, it's good that it all turned out okay at the end, and Ben, you're still alive, everything's good.
Yeah, and we still managed to go to Otakon. I mean...
Yep.
Like you had, like Ben had to stay and go to the hospital, and I drove my. Actually, no. I didn't drive myself out. I thought I wasn't going to make it, but I reached. I told some of our indie game dev friends on Twitter.
Undercog guys.
Yeah, the guys who are making this indie game called Undercog. Nate, he graciously, and he's absolutely sweetheart. He drove out of his way to pick me up. Like 4 hours out of his way to pick me up and take me to Otakon with him. I love the indie game dev community. We're like a big, brotherhood or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Or something.
I don't know. Brotherhood, sisterhood, I don't know.
Yes. Hey, we get along pretty well, so.
Yeah, you get along pretty well.
It's weird because, you know, everyone is competing for the same people, the same players.
Yeah, yeah, we're all like... Like ostensibly, we're competing against one another for these people, yeah, but we genuinely just want everybody to succeed. We're cheering each other on, and we're kind of like neighbors at these conventions. And we go around like in a convention circuit, and we see the same guys, and you know, we pimp each other's products. Like, oh, thanks for playing our game. You should check out these guys. Then at night we go out and eat and get drunk.
You get drunk. I'd go to sleep.
Yeah. No.
Either one sounds good after a nice hard day of showing off video games.
Yes.
But Ben, Jason, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders, No Race. Robo Puzzle Smash. Where can more people find more info on this game?
Right now it's really hard. You can follow me on Twitter at PixelPlease. I do a lot of developer updates, kind of keep people in the loop what's going on with the game. We have been meaning to put up a website for...
Yeah, it's a while. Finding the time for us to step away from the game in our little free time. To step away from the game and actually put up a stupid little website for a game.
Yeah, we're looking to launch probably early next year, mid next year.
Yeah, probably mid next year.
Yeah. So we got a little bit of time before, you know,
And since we're indie game devs and we're doing this just when we can, there's no guarantees on release date. We're trying.
That's all we can ask of you, man. Just try your best, and I'm sure that the end product is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, right now the only way you can get your fix is by following us at conventions and yeah, that's about it. That's the only way to play it now.
Right now, yeah.
All right, let's see if we can get some Robo Puzzle Smash groupies going for you guys.
That would be awesome.
But again, Ben, Jason, thank you so much, and best of luck to all your upcoming conventions. When's the next one you're going to be at so our listeners can hopefully go and see you?
So the next one we're doing is Ohio Game Developer Expo in Columbus, Ohio. We're going to be at COSAI, which is an awesome place anyway. But they're doing a expo there with, I think, about 30 other developers, something like that. And then we are going to be at GameCon later in the month. Well, OGDE, the Ohio Developer Expo, is running the 6th to the 8th of November. Uh-huh. And then GameCon in Atlantic City is the next one we're going to be at.
Yeah, that's the 20th through the 22nd of November. And then we're at DerpyCon, aren't we?
Yeah, we're doing DerpyCon too.
Oh, wow. That's going to be fun.
We'll see.
yeah,
that's
in December.
December.
Very cool. And please, for our listeners, if you're going to any of those conventions, please go and check out Robo Puzzle Smash. I guarantee you it's going to be a lot of fun when you go hands-on with it.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. All right. Here's a little number from Tokyo Ska Paradise Orchestra, and this comes off of last year's Ska Me Forever record. This is Downbeat Star. That was Toe with Past and Language from 2005's The Book About My Idle Plot on a Vague Anxiety. This year, the band dropped a new album called Hear You, and you can bet that this record will find its way onto our top albums list at the end of 2015. I know that this movie has been out for a while, but I finally got around to seeing The Martian with Matt Damon as Mark Watney, botanist in space. A storm on Mars forces an astronaut crew off the planet, but as they escape, Mark is hit with debris and feared dead. The next day, Mark wakes up and sees he's all alone on the planet. Fearing death, he decides that in order to survive, he is going to have to, quote, science the shit out of his situation. He grows vegetables, finds a way to contact NASA, and gathers up enough hope that he will be rescued. Of course, life on Mars is never easy, as the unexpected is always hanging behind the red cliffs of the planet. What I didn't realize going into The Martian was how funny it was going to be. I mean, you see these ads and trailers for the film, and they're all done in this very serious tone. And then, all of a sudden, there's Matt Damon and Jessica Chastain cracking jokes about his situation. Donald Glover acting all spastic as he figures out a plan to save Watney. And Jeff Daniels acting all straight-faced as he takes questions and answers them in an unintentionally funny way. It was actually a nice surprise to see Ridley Scott add more comedic chops to his outstanding resume. I mean, last I checked, funny films, all he had was Matchstick Men. And if you've never seen Matchstick Men, shame on you. One of, probably, Nicolas Cage's finest role, in my honest opinion. But anyways, it was a nice surprise to see a sci-fi film that knows when to take things seriously and when not to. We've been so drowned out by stories of survival that lack any sort of lighthearted moments that I was kind of getting sick and tired of it. I mean, we all know in these stories that the main focus of the tale is more than likely going to survive, so why should we have to watch this character suffer throughout the vast majority of it? The Martian did a great job with the concept of laughing in the face of death, and because of that, Watney was able to take on any challenge and just about come out on top every single time. What I'm saying is, if you haven't seen The Martian yet because you think it's just another one of those survival stories that takes itself far too seriously, well, for starters, I wouldn't blame you. That's how the trailers made it seem. And second, I suggest going to see it. I was very happy to see what type of film it turned out to be, and I'm sure it's going to be one of those movies that many people will be putting on the top of their year-end list for best of the year. I mean, it's certainly nearing the top of my list, that's for sure. So please, go see The Martian if you haven't yet. You won't be disappointed. Coming up, we've got Math the Band, who recently added a couple more members to their group and are now dubbing themselves Math the Band the Band. Here's a cut from their new album, Math the Band, the album. Yes, I know this is sounding a little ridiculous. And it goes by the name of Didn't Have Time to Think.
I didn't even have time to think. I didn't even have time to think. I didn't even have time to put my shoes on. I found myself in.
It's a dream.
It's all.
always a treat.
Yeah.
26 times EP, that was Lazy Guns Brisky with Ring, Ring, Ring. Sadly, the band went their separate ways after releasing their 2011 self-titled album, which is also a really good record if you haven't checked that one out yet. Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Silent Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, on Twitter at king_baby_duck, and on Anime Amino at kingbabyduckesh. Like us on facebook.com/bostonbastardbrigade and on facebook.com/landofesh. And also, don't forget about all the other sites under the Land of Esh, including the Electric Sisterhood, Issues Program, Geek Aggro, and the Structure Network. My thanks once again to Ben Cole and Jason Pogue for stopping by to chat all things Robo Puzzle Smash. For more information, go to their official Facebook page at facebook.com/pxlplz. That's facebook.com/pixelplease. Be sure to like them so you can stay up to date in regards to both con appearances and game updates. We're going to end the show with the new track from Spy Air, which serves as the opening theme to Season 2 of that awesome volleyball anime known as Haikyuu. This is such an awesome track. It's called I'm a Believer. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard. But it sure helps. guys, Evan Borgo here, reminding you that what you hear each week on No Borders No Race is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed what you heard this week and want to support one of these musicians, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites and labels, or even your local record store. We always give our listeners and readers the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun, so if something resonated with you, give the album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help bring your favorite J-pop artist closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.